Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and it's time for this week's Know Your Foe episode with a Cowboys writer, Aaron Kasinets. Kasinets. I'm sorry, my friend, who covers the Cowboys for LoneStarLive.com. Was originally a Ravens, if you recognize the name, was originally a Ravens writer a few years back for Penn Live.
Correct. Yeah. So 2018 to 2020, I covered the Ravens. So I got Lamar's first 3 years on the beat there, which was an exciting time for sure. But I've been here in Dallas and I've started covering the Cowboys midway through training camp is when I jumped on the Cowboys beat here in Dallas.
Well, very cool. So we're all interested in hearing about a Cowboys team that has really seen some ups and downs already in the first 2 weeks. Obviously slammed the Browns in week one, got destroyed by the Saints at home in week two, which has got to be one of the worst losses in Dallas in many years. But tell us a little bit about the Cowboys' current situation this year, I guess, in terms of what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, similar to the Ravens, I think they came in with so much optimism. You know, they're a team that's been knocking on the door these last couple years, three straight 12-win seasons. And then, you know, you have a nice week one win that was super comfortable, didn't feel much stress. And then week two, they got their doors blown off, right? Like they gave up touchdowns on the first six possessions of the Saints. So that's rough. The offense looked a little disjointed. So I think Cowboys fans are spread. It's very different fan base than I've covered the Eagles and Ravens, and the Cowboys have the widest fan base here in Dallas. Is not quite as passionate maybe as in some places, but they've got fans all over the world. And a lot of those fans are nervous and rightfully so, because the last two times they've played at AT&T Stadium, they've gotten blown out by underdogs, right? The Packers beat them very convincingly in the playoffs last season. And then week two, and you know, the Saints obviously look great, but when Derek Carr and 29-year-old Alvin Kamara are ripping through you, that's not necessarily the same thing as Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce doing it. So that's kind of where we're at. 2 weeks in, I think there's some real optimism still, but also some real concern after what happened against New Orleans.
So Dak Prescott just got his new deal. Want to set up a little bit where the Cowboys are with cap space. Has a significant cap number this year because he's still rolling through the old contract. But Cowboys actually have about 24, 25 million of cap right now this year that will potentially roll over a good chunk.
Yeah, so that was kind of their plan with re-signing. It was both Dak Prescott and about 2 weeks before Prescott signed his contract. And Prescott signed the morning of week one. So that would definitely had a few fans and certainly some people in the organization a little nervous. But about 2 weeks before, they also signed CeeDee Lamb to a 4-year deal that makes him the second highest paid receiver in the league. So that one was big, and they kind of, the idea was obviously to lock those guys up, but then create that rollover cap space. The challenge that the Cowboys have is really all at the same time. They had three guys come up for these big deals because Michael Parsons, one of the best defensive players in general, but certainly one of the best pass rushers, a unique linebacker. He's now able to, you know, in his fourth year, able to negotiate a new contract himself. Sure, you could pick up the option on that guy, but I don't think he's going to play, and they did, but I don't think he's going to play his fifth year on that contract. So right now, it's kind of like we're on hold with their contract situation because there's an assumption that they're going to have a third giant contract come up maybe before next season starts.
You mentioned Micah possibly not playing on that. He doesn't really have another option in the end. The leverage all belongs to the team in that case, right?
Correct. Yeah, it's similar to the CeeDee Lamb situation this year or Lamar a couple of years back. If as Ravens fans remember, that fifth year option, you kind of have to play out, but you can hold out, which he's been very positive. He says he's a Cowboys fan, a Cowboys guy for life, you know, even though he's still only in his fourth year. But I guess what I'm saying is that there's likely to be a holdout if he does not have a contract by next training camp. And, sure, the team has a little bit of leverage in that instance. It wasn't like Prescott had all the leverage this year. But I think Mike is an important enough figure to their defense that they would need to take care of him before next training camp, which is why I think it's around here, folks are not feeling set on how their cap space will look in case something gets done before free agency.
All right, fair enough. Let's move on to the current Cowboys injury situation. I know they have a fairly extensive report. Who's really hurt and not going to play among that group? Is the CeeDee Lamb injury serious?
Seems like CeeDee Lamb is fine. He said he was fine. He did return to practice in limited capacity. Trayvon Diggs is the one who you're a little, he was listed there with the foot. He coming off an ACL tear from last year. So he's the one who maybe you know, raise your eyebrows a little bit more at, but I would expect both of them to play. The one starter who seems more questionable is Mazi Smith, defensive tackle. He left. He kind of walked off the practice field on Wednesday gingerly. He was like holding his back, walking with the trainer. So he might have tweaked it. Did not practice Thursday. Mike McCarthy said on Thursday that they've got a little work to do on him. So that's tough. And then the other guy to pay attention to is tight end Jake Ferguson. He missed the last game. Ferguson is really good blocker. He was their second leading receiver last year. He's really important to the offense. And he missed last week with an MCL sprain. I expect Ferguson to play, but maybe not be 100%. He has a big wrapping on his injured knee. So it's really, I would say it's likely Diggs and Lamb play. I would say Mazi Smith, defensive tackle, and tight end Jake Ferguson are more the ones who you might want to keep an eye on when those inactive lists and the first couple snaps of the game to see how they're doing.
Okay, Mazi Smith certainly not at a position of strength for the Cowboys. We'll get to that a little bit later.
Yeah.
But let's jump right into the offense here, talk about Dak Prescott a little bit. In terms of strengths, weaknesses, what's different about his game this year?
Yeah, it's hard to say. It's been challenging and we'll talk about personnel packages, it's been challenging to get a real read on the Cowboys offense because of the way their first two games played out. Against the Browns, they had a punt return touchdown, a couple interceptions, dominated, and could really just cruise in the second half, run the ball. And then, you know, the Saints, it was the exact opposite, right? They had to go four wide and throw the ball because they were trying to make up this big deficit. Prescott threw two interceptions against the Saints, kind of forcing the ball a little bit. In terms of his game, he still seems super accurate. He looked great at training camp, has a really good command of the offense. Him and McCarthy seem to be connected. I do wonder about his mobility a little bit, you know, as he crosses, he's in his ninth year. I think he was kind of always a guy who could extend plays, certainly not a Lamar Jackson making plays. But so far this year, he's had a couple instances where he said, maybe I should run, maybe I should have taken off. We haven't seen him really extend plays the way maybe he did in the past. So that's something to watch as he gets older in his game, but he still seems super sharp and still has a very strong command of the offense.
So just two things I want to ask about. One was how has he been good about getting the Cowboys to the line of scrimmage and working from that? I'll give you two questions at once and you can answer them both. The other is, how has he been with unforced errors? Now, I think of Prescott as been a guy who has mostly forced errors, but he's capable of some unforced errors as well.
Yeah, last year he had a big spike in interceptions and I wasn't covering the team, so I didn't have a advanced understanding of what happened, right? He was a pretty low interception guy earlier in his career. So far this year, he's got one of his two interceptions were bad on Sunday. Tyrann Mathieu kind of dropped back and hopped off one route and he Prescott, they were down by a lot in the fourth quarter, tried to force a throw. That's an unforced error for sure. His other interception, the receiver just stumbled. So you can't really blame him on that one. So I would say as far as the interceptions, yeah, he had that one when you talk about unforced errors. Also, CeeDee Lamb held out of training camp to get that contract, and he's really the only receiver that scares you on the Cowboys. So I think when you talk about unforced errors, I think there's been a few times where either Prescott's forcing it to Lamb, and that's what's, you know, unforced, or the connection's a little off. So they had a play in the red zone on Sunday against the Saints where it was just clear that you know, probably an option route, and Prescott thought Lamb was going to go one way and he went the other. So whether or not that's an unforced error, you could kind of define it however you want, but I think that's been these first two games, the connection with his best receiver has been a little iffy. And otherwise he's been smart with the ball. He gets the line of scrimmage well. I think he has a good command of the offense. There's a rookie center starting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, picking up blitzes and stuff, it might be a question, especially Sunday, what the Ravens like to do. But he's got a command of it, gets to the line well, not making too many unforced errors. But the fact that his interceptions were up last year, he threw two on Sunday, and he's not 100% connecting with Lamb. I think those are just things to at least keep your eye on after Prescott had a great year last year.
Okay, well, let's move on. You mentioned the center, but let's talk about the offensive line. Take us through left to right. Who's playing there now? This is not the Cowboy line of old, but still some very good players there.
Yeah, I mean, when I first started covering the league, the Cowboys were like the pinnacle of offensive line play with some of those guys. I still got one of them, Zach Martin, right guard, but we'll go left to right. Like you said, Tyler Guyton is a first-round rookie out of Oklahoma, left tackle. Tyler Smith is at guard. Cooper Beebe, third rounder from Kansas State, is the center. He did not play center in college. He was mostly a guard. So that's why some of the snaps and blitz protections are just things to watch. But he's been doing really well on that. Zach Martin, I believe a 9-time All-Pro. Kind of similar to when I covered the Ravens and they had Marshall Yonda, right? He's mm-hmm. he's the guy who they can anchor the line around. And then Terrence Steele is the right tackle. So solid line. The fact that they've got two rookies, obviously, means that you hope that the play gets better throughout the year, but the rookies graded out well on PFF and haven't had too many noticeable blunders the first 2 weeks.
Guyton was somebody who was certainly on my list to go in the top 25 or so. Now the Ravens got a chance to draft Nate Wiggins. The Cowboys had jumped ahead to get Guyton ahead of the Ravens to do that, of course. But they had other options at tackle, and it was a case where left tackle, they're going to have to make a reach for either in round one or round two to get a player. And they ended up reaching in round two, in my opinion, to get Rosengarten, probably by 20 picks or so to do it. There's other people who say you're completely wrong, Ken. They got Rosengarten exactly where they're supposed to get him. But I'm not really buying that. But anyway, with Guyton, he was much more of a gamble, because much more of a size and shape guy, more measurements guy than somebody who had a ton of high level play in college at left tackle.
Yeah. And sorry, I keep looking back to the old Ravens because I just when I covered the team, but sure. It's almost the exact opposite of Orlando Brown, who the team drafted when I was covering the team, where it's like, this guy has good tape, pedigree, all that stuff. But like, does he have the measurables, right? He had that terrible combine. Guyton is like, numbers are great. Like you look at him, he's imposing, seems like he has the right mindset, pretty stoic guy, which I think out of the offensive linemen you like. So I think they felt good about him. He didn't begin training camp on the first team. They had a couple injuries there. And he kind of was forced onto it. I think they probably wanted him to start anyways. But that at least raises the question, what would he have been starting had everything been healthy?
Who had that role to start camp?
Chuma Ejigboba. I want to make sure I'm getting his name right. I started covering the team right when he went on the injured reserve. Okay. So, it was a filler, for sure. Tyron Smith, the all pro left tackle, is now with the Jets, who had been handling that role for the Cowboys for a long time. So eventually Guyton was going to start this year at some point, whether it was going to be week one or week five or week 10. I think he was going to start at some point. So far he's played well. First week he had Myles Garrett as a guy he was matching up against, and they gave him some help. They did some things again because the Cowboys were in control all game. It's not like he's really tested. But so far so good for Guyton. I agree. He was a little bit of a gamble, but he's got the measurables, and I think the Cowboys feel really confident. They look back a couple of years and they said, we developed Zach Martin, and then, different folks, but developed Zach Martin, developed Travis Frederick, developed Tyron Smith. Like we've got a pedigree here. We think we can do it. I think the front office at least is really confident in how they evaluate offensive linemen.
All right. All right, let's move on. Talk about the wide receivers a little bit, and a couple guys there on the injury report as well. Lamb, we mentioned earlier, but there's somebody else there on the IR. Sorry, on the list as well.
Yeah, Jalen Brooks popped up on the injury report just on Thursday, and that's when the Cowboys have their padded practice. So we don't know yet. I think we'll have to see what the report says today, and talk with Coach Mike McCarthy in about an hour and a half. But Friday afternoon, Mike McCarthy. So post us recording, we'll learn a little bit more about Jalen Brooks. But Brooks is kind of the number four guy at best. I think there are some questions, maybe even number five guy, if he was even going to be active, were he healthy.
Are the rules still the same as they are with the Ravens? I don't know how other teams handle it, that you watch 30 minutes of practice during the week only, enough to get the injury report, basically injury, and then you go back into the reporting room and you come back out for interviews?
Correct. The Cowboys don't have availability or open practice on Friday, so just Wednesday, Thursday. So reporters will not be able to watch today. We'll just get the injury report and talk to the coach Friday afternoon.
Okay. All right. Very good. And is he the only one that takes the podium on Friday, or is it anybody else there too?
Yeah, they'll have one play. It's a conference call, so they don't do anything at the facility. Okay. On a Friday, four reporters, there'll be a conference call, maybe one other player. The Cowboys shut it down on Friday, so it's just Wednesday, Thursday when they do open practice and all that.
So for folks out there, if you understand what Friday practice is, it's usually a walkthrough, which is done at half speed or quarter speed even sometimes. In fact, sometimes the players even make fun of it by kind of pretending like they're chasing after them, particularly the defenders who don't have a lot to do. Defenders need to get to the right spot in zone coverage. They need to, you know, get the right release and things like that. But you're literally practicing your footsteps for individual plays. And the plays that have been installed earlier during the week, they're practiced in terms of actual dance steps, if you want to call it, on Friday. And I assume that's the same for the Cowboys as it is for the Ravens.
Yeah, pretty similar. And even Saturday, most teams will do a walkthrough that's a little similar. So what the Cowboys plan is, and every team does it slightly different, but it's all similar. Obviously meetings on Wednesday and kind of their first look at the practice Wednesday. And then Thursday is the one practice a week they do the full pads. So that's why occasionally you see an injury pop up. Trayvon Diggs last year tore his ACL at one of those Thursday practices right before week three, actually. So just a year ago. So that's that Thursday, they really kind of go hard. And then Friday is just, like you said, walk through, you know, literally ball is snapped and we just walk to where we're supposed to go. And then similar kind of walkthrough on Saturday to either travel or, in this case, for the Cowboys, just get ready to play on Sunday.
All right. I've always heard that Saturday was mostly meetings, and maybe I'm missing something. But, you know, if you're traveling on Saturday, obviously the thing you would most likely be doing, all players have to stay in the team hotel. And by the way, that's true home or road, because it's like herding cats oftentimes with NFL players and what they might do with their free time if allowed to their own devices. And that's not everyone, but these are young men, prime of their lives, lots of money. They could be up to a lot of different things that you wouldn't want to do. And baseball players, the same risks exist on the road, but they don't really control them in the same way. With football players, everybody stays in the hotel the night before, and they actually have meetings to keep the players from running all over the place, including famous ones that you've probably heard of, the special teams meeting where everybody gets up and counts off their number from 1 to 11 on the punt team, on the kickoff team, on the coverage teams and whatnot. So do you stay in the same hotel with the Cowboys at all, or have you done it yet this year?
That is a possibility. Like, we know where the Cowboys are staying. We typically do not. And maybe, you know, if I feel like there's something to be reported, I might sniff around. Okay. But usually, because it's cheaper for us as reporters, usually we do not.
You get another place. Okay, very good. Yeah. And I've seen the Steelers requirements for the hotels that they try and stay in. We're way off target here. But the Steelers demand three consecutive floors of the hotel for their people, coaches and players, but it has to be three in a row, and then they have to have ballroom. But they have might be 20 to 40 pages of requirements from the hotels saying, hey, we need all of these things. You can't let us down on any of this, or we can't do business with you. And they apparently are successful in getting it.
Yeah, I haven't seen that with the Steelers. That's interesting. That's an interesting thing to follow, how the different teams travel in those ways. Obviously, they like to keep it tight-lipped sometimes because they don't want people showing up, bothering them. But yeah, I think, and all that stuff factors in, right? You have a bad week of preparation, or players getting in trouble, like that. That stuff matters, and coaches, you know, Baltimore, John Harbaugh likes to have his fingerprints on everything. So they have structure for sure.
Certainly does. Maybe you're covering the Ravens. You might have heard of this, but 21 years ago, Chris McAllister went out for a road trip in San Diego and actually got sent home early because he was not where he was supposed to be. And the Ravens have kept it tight all of these years. I've asked specifically people what happened, but they've never said whether it was, you know, women in the hotel, booze, you know, out late, you know, not himself, whatever it might have been. But they sent him home early. They didn't allow him to play in the game. Man. And that's a really rare occurrence, though. But they keep good control over that.
And that's not, I hadn't heard that, but that's not, Chris McAllister's a legit player. That's not like you're sending the you know, third tight end, you know, back home.
Great player, but definitely known as probably the wildest of wild men in Ravens history. He had his own parking space at the strip club Scores, reportedly. So okay. It's like when you have your initials are on a parking spot or whatever. I don't know if that was it was legit.
Kind of like the assistant principal at a school, but
yeah, or John Harbaugh or you know, whatever. There's a JH parking spot right in the Ravens lot. So yeah. All right, let's keep going. We're going too far afield here. Take us through the wide receiver. I think you started on this and then I got you sidetracked.
Yeah, so CeeDee Lamb is far and away the Cowboys' best option. Brandon Cooks, who, you know, he's been around the league, multiple teams, multiple, you know, he's caught passes from Drew Brees and Tom Brady. So he's a known name, great locker room presence. He's 30, still has it, but definitely a number two to Lamb's number one. Jalen Tolbert is the guy, third-year guy, South Alabama, third-round pick a couple years ago, who kind of has the jump ball ability, bigger, faster, runs those go routes. The fact that Lamb, obviously he's a top flight receiver in a lot of regards, but the fact that he does a lot of work out of the slot allows Cooks and Tolbert to be on the outside. After that, it's kind of questions, and Cooks with his age and Tolbert's unproven, it's really kind of a star heavy. Like CeeDee Lamb is very good, can do a lot of different things. The rest of the receivers, that's where the questions come in. Beyond those top three, Jalen Brooks has been a guy who's been active and played a lot. Second year guy. He was a seventh round pick last year out of South Carolina. Hasn't really proven himself yet. Had a stumble, like I mentioned, in the last game. And then Kevontae Turpin has been the other guy who's been active as a receiver. He's a returner. They've used him in the backfield a little bit out of the slot. So that they've gotten him in meaningful situations. They've gotten him the ball and found ways to get him involved in the offense. But he's really active because he's the returner. So it's not, I'm sure he's somebody that the Ravens are paying attention to game plan wise, but he could be a big factor, or he could play three or four offensive snaps.
It looks like he's played about 17 pass snaps so far this year. So
And he lined up in the backfield on a couple of those. Like, he's not just as a receiver, like they'll do some creative packages with him.
All right. Gadget guy. Okay. Let's move on to the running backs. Let's start with, do they use a fullback at all, or is it a tight end in the backfield when they do, or what do they do?
Yeah. So they have a pretty traditional fullback in Hunter Lepke, North Dakota State undrafted guy who made the team last year and carved out a role. He's solid fullback. Again, one of those guys that's been tough to evaluate this year because played a ton week one when the Cowboys were in control. And then I think played only 10 offensive snaps last week when they were trying to come back and make up a long deficit. So they do have a fullback. I think they do like to run. They run out of 11 personnel, just like every other team, but I think they like to use the fullback a decent amount. I would expect maybe 20 snaps out of Hunter Lepke, a fullback. And then their running back room is kind of a question mark here in Dallas. They've got Ezekiel Elliott. Obviously, he's had a great career in Dallas, but he's 29. His numbers have gone down the last 3 years. Hasn't really shown the burst that you would hope from a top guy. Their other running backs are unproven. Rico Dowdle probably is their best option at this point. Averaging under 4 yards a carry this year, though. So again, he just hasn't quite shown it yet. Maybe that'll change this week. And then Deuce Vaughn is their third guy. He's just another gadget. It's interesting that they have two gadget guys active. Deuce Vaughn is smaller, shifty. He's really fun to watch at Kansas State, but he doesn't return, doesn't play much on special teams. So he's really there just for these offensive packages. The way I look at Deuce Vaughn is he's kind of like Darren Sproles with his size and quickness, but without the strength. Like Darren, what made Darren Sproles so effective was like he was the strongest guy pound for pound, even if he was the smallest.
Yeah, also very elusive. I mean, that was a big part of his missed tackles forced. But if let's go back to Elliott and Rico, if you want to, in terms of the two of those guys, what they are doing in terms of yards after contact and whatnot, and then fold that in with the offensive line and the amount of second level first contact options they're getting, options, wrong word, snaps that they're giving players.
Yeah, I don't have the after contact yards with me, but
I've got it here if you want to hear it. Elliott is at 2.13 yards after contact per attempt, and Rico Dowdle is at 2.07. And this is really bad. Zeke has got zero missed tackles forced on the year.
That's the stat I was going to say. I didn't know.
Yeah, and Rico has one.
Yeah, they're just not that elusive. You know, and the line hasn't given the second level. Again, it's hard. I think they both have 15, 16 carries so far this year. But yeah, like the NFL next gen stats say that their yards above expected per carry are way below. They're both about a yard and a half below expected. Wow. So yeah, the running back, the stats are not kind to the running backs. Again, they haven't gotten that many opportunities yet. Cowboys threw a lot in week two. They had some third down struggles in week one and had a big lead. So it was kind of vanilla. So a little hard. The Cowboys keep saying we need more reps. We haven't had a good chance to really analyze how they're doing. Like, we have confidence. Part of that is true because of the way the first two games played out. Part of it's lip service. Like, they just don't have a dominant running back right now. I think Ezekiel Elliott's really good in short yardage situations, and he's still a very good blocker, so he has a purpose. Is he a starting caliber running back? Probably not. Dowdle hasn't proven himself. Like I said, Vaughn's still more of a gadget guy. So they don't have a running back that should scare you. I think they haven't said this out loud, but I think Mike McCarthy had a lot of success in Green Bay, just kind of piecing together the running back position for a lot of years.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab. Also, on them.
Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And I think that's their game plan.
Okay.
And I would also just want to mention Dalvin Cook, four-time Pro Bowler, is on the practice squad. But he's similar to Elliott. Kind of his numbers, at least, fell off a cliff last year. Ravens fans know him.
Yes.
The team hasn't given him indication that he's going to talk to him a few times in the locker room this week. And last week, the team hasn't given him indication he's going to be elevated. But, he's here for a reason, and it's not like the running backs that they do have on the roster have been convincing. So there's a possibility Dalvin Cook is elevated and suits up.
That's really interesting. I wonder about that. Has Dallas been a team? I mean, the one thing about the Ravens practice squad is it ceased to be a talent farm. It ceased to be like a AAA team with a lot of young players on it who are, you know, you hope you have some prospect value in the future. It's more like a 6 and 8 year veteran, that, you know, ready packaged goods to come on the field.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny you ask, cause I've got a story in the works on that. But just because Dalvin Cook is on the Cowboys, I feel like it's an interesting story how teams have 4 years ago, I think, is when they shifted the practice squad rules to allow more veterans, right? It started with COVID and they continue to change it. I think because – so the Cowboys kind of do both. They've got Dalvin Cook. They've got Nick Vigil as a linebacker that NFL fans might know. He played played for the Vikings.
And Ravens fans know him because he's the guy Lamar put the spin move on his 49-yard run. That's the he is Houdini highlight. Nick Vigil also, interestingly, that year was the guy who tackled Lamar Jackson the most times individually. So he has that highlight that his family is going to be seeing for the rest of their life.
Yes. Now that you say that, I was at that game. So yeah, I remember that one. Yeah. The reason he's kind of here in Dallas is because he has a connection with Mike Zimmer, who's now the defense coordinator, played for him in Minnesota, but yeah, in Cincinnati and all that stuff. So yeah, Nick Vigil he's on the practice squad, but he played over 20 snaps in week one. So he's another one of those guys similar to how the Ravens used Dalvin Cook and, Bell and a few other running backs in the past. But the Cowboys do have practice squads are bigger now. So 17 is what the Cowboys are at, because they've got one
international
squad player who's international pipeline, so that they, even though they've got a few of those guys who are vets who they can call up, they also have 10, 11 guys who they do see as kind of farm system developing undrafted rookie tech.
Okay. All right. Very good. So I guess we didn't really talk about the tight ends in this. We just jumped to the running backs, but you mentioned Ferguson earlier. How about the other tight ends?
Yeah, that's really the key. I don't think the other tight ends scare you too much. Luke Schoonmaker, second-year guy, is out of Michigan, the guy who would be the starter if Ferguson can't go. I assume Ferguson will at least give it a try. Schoonmaker doesn't quite have the explosion Ferguson does. Schoonmaker had a career-high in catches last week, but that was a lot of bootlegs and pretty much any tight end could have rolled out and catch it. I think Schoonmaker still has a chance to be a good player, but Ferguson is clearly their best guy. The two guys beyond that are undrafted guys who are kind of bodies. No disrespect, John Stevens and Brevin Spanford. And I think they both have potential to be playmakers. They aren't yet.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Any other common plays or formations, maybe in the passing game? I think you've answered the question already about running out of 11. They do have a fullback, so we don't need to go there, but maybe some common pass looks they give you. Do they use a lot of bunch and rub and pick formations? Rub and pick. Yeah.
They'll do a little of that. Again, challenging to know because I think they didn't throw much in week one. And then in week two, they did have to throw a lot, but Ferguson, who was their second main receiver last year, without. So I think they might do, they'll do, but they like to do some of that because Lamb is so versatile. So kind of the rubs and the short stuff. I think I still need to learn some of that because we haven't seen enough of it here through two games. It's really all about finding ways to get the ball to CeeDee Lamb. I mean, he's a guy who can break tackles after the catch. I don't think they're confident right now in Tolbert or even Brandon Cooks, to just be like these consistent threats. So when they do run those bunches or those rubs, it's probably so that they can give CeeDee Lamb a little breathing room, that's such an interesting matchup, whether Humphrey goes in with them or whatever. But I don't think I've covered a team where there's been a guy who's clearly the focal point like that. So all the creative stuff they do is about CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah, it's a possibility, and it's a possibility that you see some sort of gimmicky defense. But I'll tell you what, the bunch formation picks and rubs are something that comes in the division a lot. The Steelers have done it all basically to cover for Roethlisberger's declining arm in his later years. And the Bengals do it some, and the Chiefs really hammered the Ravens with it in week one. And it was one of the really downsides so far of what's happened with Zach Orr is that he didn't come up with a solution for it in game. So that was kind of tough to see, but, okay, well, that sounds good. Let's move over to the defensive side anyway and talk about this. What I always like to talk about first on the defense is frame this up for me, what the Cowboys look like on third down in an obvious passing situation. Are they a team that goes to the dime? Do they keep a committed nickel, or how do they line up generally?
They mostly have a committed nickel. Jordan Lewis, very, very good nickel back slot corner. 2017, I believe he came into the league, so... They've got that. So it's a pretty nickel with two linebackers. The wild card is Micah Parsons because you can line him up wherever. But yeah, I mean, if you're talking 11 personnel, it would be nickel. The two safeties are Malik Hooker and Donovan Wilson, you know, solid starters, two linebackers and then four pass rushers. Zimmer's always done like a 4-3 or in that case.
Right.
So that's another line.
So is yeah, Parsons, you say he can line him anyway. Does he line up off ball much, or if he does line up off ball, is he really just trying to pick a gap from off ball, like we saw Matt Judon do in the past for the Ravens, for example, or is it a case where he's a significant portion of the time he's got his hand in the turf?
If you would ask Micah, he would say that every game he'd be doing something different. And I think Mike Zimmer too. He's usually hand in the dirt. Let's go rush the passer or even find a gap guy. But he's like, they've hinted, which makes me think they're not actually going to do it. They've hinted him playing stand up linebacker spy Lamar Jackson because he's their fastest. Like he's as fast as safeties, which would not rush the passer at all. He would be a, you know, more of a spy type. I think you might see some of that. I don't think they'll do that, you know, 50 snaps. But he really is one of the most versatile players. And Dan Quinn used him in all sorts of ways. Zimmer says that he's welcome to use him in all sorts of ways. So far this year, it's mostly been hand in the dirt, rush the passer. But from all different, you know, inside, outside, wherever. He lined up across from every single lineman in week one.
Okay. All right. Fascinating. Okay. So let's start with the down linemen then. And I guess you're telling me it's a 4-3. So they're the guys that are most traditionally have their hands in the dirt, and the rotation and snap management for them. Is Dallas a rotational team, or do they tend to overwork certain players?
So Mike is the one guy that would play 90% of the snaps. Otherwise they've got two, him and then, Marcus Lawrence on the outside, the Pro Bowl caliber guys. I think Lawrence still had two sacks in week one. He's 10-year vet, but he's still got it, I think. And I've got a rookie second round pick, Marshawn Nealand, who's shown, I think he's looked good. You know, the grades say he looks pretty good. So a pretty solid defensive end rotation. It's just that Micah plays so much. Defensive tackle is where they've had major issues, which we could get to, but the rotation wise, it's kind of, so far as maybe 60-40, they really did try to rotate five. When I say 60-40, like the starters maybe play about 60% of the snaps. OC Odighizuwa had played a whole bunch the first couple games. They had him on the field on passing downs, which surprised me a little bit. But Mozzie Smith, who I mentioned, who was hurt, been a starter, played about, week one he didn't play as much because the Browns were passing. Week two he played a lot because the Saints were running. But the third, fourth, fifth defensive tackle guys were still playing close to 20 snaps. So they do have a rotation. The challenge right now is they don't have a strong rotation because the players haven't been playing well.
So that's what I was just going to get to here. If you're a Ravens fan and you're looking at PFF and you see all these ridiculously low run grades on the defense, particularly on the line, what are those attributable to? Are people not able to hold their ground versus larger linemen? What's the problem?
I think that's part of it. I think the Saints kind of had them, you know, with that Shanahan style, you know, zone run read. I think they just I don't know what all the Cowboys kept saying was they just weren't quick to the first punch, right? Like they didn't move quickly off the ball. And I think so much of the grades came down to that game because week one, it was, you know, they kind of slaughtered Watson and sacked him six times. Week two, they just, that defensive line got pushed back. Some of the guys on PFF, so Mazi Smith's grade, he's a first round guy last year. So they were hopeful he would make a jump. Hasn't quite shown signs of that yet. But yeah, he's not getting any push there, not being able to hold his ground. Also the stat that I think also jumps out is like, I don't have it in front of me, but the Dallas defensive tackles are not drawing double teams at all, which means the linebackers
are losing really singles.
Exactly. Okay. They're losing those single blocks, and then linebackers are struggling. And again, that was almost all entirely from the Saints game. So it's hard to this early in the season attribute that, but yeah, they're just losing one-on-one blocks and not getting any penetration.
Okay. So that can mean different things to different people. So is it a lot of duo scheme where they're doing combination blocks up front and they're very easily releasing to level two? And this is just from your own viewing, I'm asking you. And if you don't know, that's fine. It's more of that guards are climbing or centers are climbing off an initial double team where it's just very easy to set these defensive tackles up.
Yeah, I don't want to say for sure because I haven't crunched all of the tape in that same way. But yet, in my interpretation, it's that those guards and centers are very quickly being able to break off and get to the second level. Part of that's the zone scheme against the Saints, and just being able to get to the edge of the field like that.
Okay. All right. Very good. All right. How about in terms of pass rush scheme? Mm-hmm. What do they do? Are they primarily, let's talk numbers first, are they primarily a four-man rush team, or do they blitz a fair amount? And when they are, in terms of scheme, do they use a lot of stunts, a lot of twists, a lot of simulated pressure, any of those three?
Yeah, they do. I mean, I assume a little bit of all of it with Zimmer this year. Looking back, again, since we're just two games in, looking back at Zimmer historically, he's more like middle ground, I believe, when it comes to blitz percentages. Things like that. I think we'll see some stunts and all that stuff. Week one against the Browns, the Browns were missing two starting offensive tackles and the Cowboys have two really good defensive ends, like I said, and they didn't need to do much of that. So that was a lot of four-man rushes without too much of anything interesting. And then against the Saints, they didn't get a chance to rush the passer as much. So I think I'm still learning how Zimmer wants to pressure. But they are primarily, you know, four guys down in passing situations against the Browns. They lined up their four guys and let them rush. What was interesting was where they lined up those four guys. So they would, you know, put Parsons or put Lawrence on the inside. They'd line them up over different linemen, but they didn't do anything too unique when they had six sacks in week one.
Is Parsons a guy who likes to line up a lot very wide, like a Yannick Ngakoue for the Ravens in the past, but a guy who in a true nine, wide nine look, or is he more a guy who likes to work directly off the shoulder of a player opposite him because he's really relying on setting him up?
Yeah, I don't think he's done the whole wide nine like way out too much, but he has. I mean, speed is his thing. He's also obviously very strong, but speed is his thing. So I think he can. Right. I think he has that ability. If that's something that Zimmer wants to use.
Okay. All right, great. Take us off ball for the linebackers a little bit and how they do this. And you indicated to me that they're a committed two linebackers, a committed nickel, which to me means the weak side linebacker stays on the field. Is it the same guy all three downs, or is it two different guys who platoon with a...
Right. Yeah, so right now it's a rotation, but the rotation could change depending on who their opponent is. And I want to be careful because the Ravens are such a unique offense. But in week one, a big star of the game was DeMarvion Overshown, who had a sack, nine tackles, second-year guy, but he missed all of last year with the torn ACL. Again, very fast linebacker, kind of the new model of linebacker, right? Like he probably would have been a safety if he'd been drafted 10 years ago. And he was great in week one. Week two, because there wasn't a mobile quarterback, it was Derek Carr, and because the Saints were able to run the ball so much, Overshown only played, I think, 18 snaps, something like that. And instead, they had a little bit more of Damone Clark and Maris Liaufu, who is a rookie. Those were the guys who were on the field. Eric Kendricks is the veteran linebacker who's on the field all the time. First year in Dallas, but has a history with Mike Zimmer. But it was an entirely different personnel look from week one to week two.
Does he have the green dot at Kendricks or is somebody Kendricks. Else?
Yeah, yeah, Kendricks has the green dot. When Kendricks came out of the game briefly for cramps in week one, that's when they put Nick Vigil in. And he got a lot of time. I don't expect Vigil to play much, but if Kendricks is out, I think Zimmer needs somebody he trusts to have the green dot. Got a lot of young linebackers around him. So that, I think that's the only way that you would see a lot of Nick Vigil is the green dot situation.
Is either their safeties a guy who would take over play calling?
I think it's possible. Both of those guys would be on the field, could be on the field the whole game. Still getting to know the personalities, so I don't know about that. I think, and they've trained the safeties to do that. But certainly in live action week one, it was when Kendricks came out, they very clearly played Nick Vigil almost solely because they wanted that sort of leadership green dot Got experience.
It. Got it. Okay. Take us to the defensive backfield. You mentioned Trayvon Diggs, obviously on the injury report, but take us through all the others as well.
Yeah, so Trayvon Diggs is the guy you've heard about, led the league in interceptions a couple years ago. Coming off the ACL tear, he's looked good, looks feisty, very committed guy, studies a lot. So I wouldn't have any concerns about him unless that foot injury is something. Wilson and Hooker, I think, are both kind of at the same point in their careers where they're established starters. Solid starters, probably neither guy's a Pro Bowler. Those are the two safeties. Jordan Lewis, very good experienced nickelback. And then the other outside corner is really where the question comes in. And again, that's if you're saying that they're playing that committed nickel. Kalen Carson is the guy who started there. He's a fifth-round rookie from Wake Forest. Team loved him in training camp, thought he did really, really well. Maryland guy from Northeast is the high school he went to down there in Southern Maryland. But he, you know, had a really strong training camp. And then Deron Bland, Pro Bowler last year, who had five interception returns for touchdowns, he suffered a foot injury and went on IR toward the end of the preseason. So now we've got this rookie, Kalen Carson, right? He's the one who's stepping in. He's played well, fine. Hasn't, I don't think, been tested as much as maybe the Cowboys even hoped. Like I think the Cowboys are happy that they won convincingly in week one. I think that, you know, week two, that it was really the ground game and the defensive tackles that did them in. But I think Carson's still unproven. And Diggs, I mean, I think Diggs has a reputation as a gambler. So it's not like Diggs is, Darrell Revis, who's not going to let you get Marcus catch. Peters. He's more of a playmaker. So there's room to attack the Cowboys secondary for sure. But if Carson's a quality starter, then all of a sudden they have a really good secondary. So I think he's just like always, if it's a rookie starter at a key position, like that's the guy who could dictate how the game unfolds.
All right. Outstanding. Great review of the players, really all the 22 in total. How do you expect them to defend the Ravens offense? Jackson specifically, you mentioned a potential to use a spy, but Ravens have a lot of other offensive assets as well to go with along with a very shaky offensive line. How do you expect them to attack that?
Yes. The interior of the Cowboys defensive line and the Ravens offensive line is going to be interesting, not necessarily because of their strengths of either team, but because I think it's probably going to be maybe the key factor of the game. And even if you don't have the best interior offensive line, you got linebackers worried about Lamar Jackson. You got Derrick Henry coming at you full speed. Like that's tough to stop. So I think the Cowboys will potentially spy Lamar. I think Overshown is the guy who is most likely to do it. He did that somewhat against Deshaun Watson, obviously very different style of offense and different style of player, but a mobile guy, and Overshown had the speed to match him sideline to sideline. Right. A lot of guys think they can do that against Lamar and they can't, at least when I was covering the team, that was pretty common. So I think having Overshown, whether it's as a spy or he's just on the field more, than he would be, because he was not on the field in base defense almost at all against the Saints. So you put him on to handle Jackson, then do you have enough muscle to, especially if your defensive line isn't standing up? So that's really the question to me. If Mazi Smith doesn't play, all of a sudden the Cowboys are going even further down their depth chart at defensive tackle. They put one of those defense tackles is a terrible PFF grade, Jordan Phillips. They put him on IR. this week. And Jordan Phillips said in the locker room, he was feeling fine. You know, that was, that was one of those, the team insists that he has a wrist, you know, it's wrist surgery, but one of those indicators that they needed help. Right. So you go out and you sign a guy off a practice squad. So they just don't have the bodies, especially if Mozzie Smith is hurt. Like you're talking about, Linval Joseph is 15-year vet. You know, how much does he have left? I think so far hasn't looked great wise. So to me, how they defend, I think it's probably with a lot of DeMarvion Overshown would be my guess. You know, kind of containing Jackson, and then they just have to hope that their defensive line gets a little push, plays a little better. I think Parsons is, I know I keep saying that he's unique. I think Parsons is the guy. It's just hard to predict what they do with him. And if they feel like they need to make a big change, moving Parsons around is kind of their only option if their defensive tackles don't play better.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. How about pick one side? I don't do score predictions on this show, but if you pick one guy on each side of the ball who you think matches up well against the Ravens, who would it be?
Matches up well against the Ravens. Question.
Take your time. We really are in no rush other than where you have to be. Yep.
Yeah. So offensively, I would say, I mean, I haven't gotten a chance to watch the Ravens too much. I flipped on that week one game a little bit. I would say the tight ends probably have a chance just because whether it's Eric Kendricks or even a Nick Vigil, the Cowboys don't necessarily have the coverage guys at linebacker or whether the safeties do it. I think that'll be interesting for the Ravens. I think their tight ends have a really good opportunity to have a big game. But I think from the Cowboys side of it, where they have opportunity is really those defensive ends, right? So the fact that the Cowboys have two really good defensive ends and Lawrence and Parsons, I think if they get the Ravens into passing situations, who is starting at right tackle for the Ravens?
Tackle is a rotational group now. So McCary has started. He's played terribly in two games. Rosengarten was terrible, gave up a snap in a serious sack in his very first NFL snap, and which he actually forced the fumble with his own arm. And then in the second game, he played better. Only 17 snaps, but made 15 out of 17 blocks on scored snaps as I had it.
Okay. So even if Rodney Stanley, seems like Rodney Stanley's kind of getting back to his old self, even if he's great, the Cowboys have two, right? Yep. And they move him around. So I think DeMarcus Lawrence and Mike Parsons are the two who – should have a good game for the Cowboys, but that's totally predicated on the Ravens occasionally being in passing situations, which given the Cowboys defensive tackles, we'll have to see. But passing situations, I think those two guys can really bother. But and they both, especially Parsons, has the speed to deal with Jackson.
How about on offense for the Cowboys? Who would be your guy? You could pick the obvious if you want to. You don't have to.
Yeah, it's hard because, and the reason I'm struggling there is I think they're going to force feed CeeDee Lamb, but I do. I mean, when I was covering the Ravens, Marlon Humphrey was as good as it got in terms of being physical near the line of scrimmage, but also being able to cover the slot or the corner or the outside. So I think he can give Lamb some trouble. I would say Ferguson if he was healthy, but it's hard because he's not fully healthy. And maybe this is indicative. I don't do predictions either. Maybe this is indicative of how I feel about how it's going to be difficult for the Cowboys because matchup-wise on offense, and I know the Ravens have struggled pass defense-wise, right? But it seems like the strengths are on the strengths in terms of Humphrey being able to, or whoever being able to defend. Lamb and then having, you know, Smith and Hamilton, I assume, is
we think, you know, I think he'll probably play. He did show up with a DNP on Thursday, which is not good. Actually, was he limited? I think he was DNP limited the first 2 days. So DNP, when you see that, you know the pattern as well as I do. When you see DNP limited and full on the 3 days, it doesn't necessarily tell you everything you need to know, but it's a common veteran thing to do as a progression during the week to play on Sunday. So we might see that. But he does not appear to be his full self. He does not appear to be the player he was last year right now due to a back or shoulder injury.
Okay. I'll give you just I'm still learning both teams. So I'll give you CeeDee Lamb as the guy to watch just because he's the obvious, I think. I don't think the Cowboys offense works if he doesn't get. He led the NFL in receptions last year. Without that, didn't make meaningful upgrades at skill positions. If Ferguson is hurt, they don't have a scary tight end. So I don't know if it's necessarily a good matchup, but I think for the Cowboys offense to work, I think CeeDee Lamb needs 6, 7, 8, 9 catches.
All right. All right. Outstanding discussion of this, outstanding review of the Cowboys talent. And I appreciate you coming on and doing this, Aaron. Tell folks where they can find your work and maybe how they can talk football or contact you online.
Yes. Yeah, so I work at a relatively new site, LoneStarLive.com. That is what it's called. Covers news, sports, and culture in Dallas. So LoneStarLive.com/Cowboys, where you'll find all the Cowboys coverage. And I'm on Twitter at Aaron Kaz Reports. Aaron Kaz is Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, Kaz, K-A-Z, Reports.
All right. Outstanding. Aaron, appreciate you coming on and appreciate getting an old Baltimore guy back on for an opportunity here. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. Opportunities are less during the regular season, but I'm trying to line people up already for that bye week. So if you have things you'd like to talk about, something's just burning a hole in your head in terms of what's wrong with the Ravens, I'll be happy to get you on and talk to you. Aaron, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, thanks so much, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.